Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Wrestling. Today we're going to be talking about the third serial of the fifth season of Doctor Who, The Ice Warriors, which consists of six episodes that aired from November 11th, 1967 to December 16th, 1967. Two episodes are missing, two and three.
But they are animated.
Oh yeah, so they're cool. Animated. Yeah.
So it's less painful.
This episode is sponsored by Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's mgoldentumbles. There's no E in there. Because it's Tumblr. Thanks for getting this episode for us. You are awesome.
True facts!
Today we have a new guest with us, Ashley Rayburn.
Woo! Hey, I'm glad to be here.
Tell everybody about yourself, who you are, and etc.
Yeah, so I'm Ashley Rayburn. I am many things related to Doctor Who. Actually, I do many things related to Doctor Who. I am the one of the co-founders of the Tennessee Who Authority, which is a local ish Doctor Who fan group. And I also am the one of the co-program directors of Doctor Who content at Timegate, which is a convention in Atlanta. Well, it's actually Wholanta now. It has been previously Timegate. It is now Wholanta, and that's Memorial Day weekend. And I am on a podcast called The Oncoming Storm Podcast, which is a podcast where we talk about Doctor Who as it concerns spinoff media. So we talk about novels and comic books and audios. So we jump into that, do much of what you guys are doing here, except with those spinoff medias. We're kind of going through those novels and audios in order. Now, I've been a Doctor Who fan since I was about 2 years old. So I've been watching the show and consuming the show for years and years. So hopefully I can add something today.
So, like, how much have you seen all of Classic Who? Or
yeah, I mean, in theory, there's always occasionally I'll find something that I'm like, oh wait, you know what? I haven't seen that for whatever reason. But yeah, I have. You watch? You guys were talking about the animation. The version of this that I watched was actually the ones with the reconstruction. Incidentally, I have the one with the animation. I just went back and watched that because it's the first one I picked up. I'm fairly familiar with Doctor Who, and the reason I picked this one to do is I'm a huge Ice Warriors fan. So everyone that knows me knows that I have, for some reason, this love for Ice Warriors.
So you do like watch a lot of the like missing ones too, or?
Yeah, so I've watched through them. You know, those missing ones are tricky because many of them there's audio for, or there's telesnaps, the telesnap archives, and those kinds of things. So if you have the reconstructions. And some of them have been animated, but yeah, I've seen through most of them.
Cool. Because I know some people are just like, nah, not gonna fool with us.
Oh no, I have no issue watching the reconstructions. It's just finding the time when you have a Daleks Master Plan, which is 12 episodes, and I think there's one episode that exists, or maybe two.
It definitely feels like a whole year of your life.
Yeah, which I like that story quite a bit. And it's one that I would love them to animate along with Power and Evil of the Daleks, which are great stories that it's unfortunate that we don't have.
I wish they just animated all of them.
I guess their deal just didn't come through because they kind of did some finagling to get the animations that they got.
Yeah, I was about to say, from what I've heard, generally if someone does an animation for Doctor Who, they like quickly go out of business shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I know the ones that did, if I'm not mistaken, the reason they got the first one that they did, which was The Invasion, that company was carried over from when they did an animation from the, they did an online thing called Scream of the Shalka. They were going to reboot Doctor Who online, and they had an animation. It wasn't much of an animation, but it was animation. And I believe something about their contract that they had let them do more than that. But for whatever reason, the new series started. So they got rid of Scream of the Shalka and that version. Richard E. Grant played Doctor Who in that. And they still had that license. So they were like, well, here, do this. So that's the reason the animations even started.
That's good, though. Like, I like the animations. The recons are cool and all, but sometimes it's just like, I can't just stare at this picture and hear wind. And
oh, yeah, they're tough. They're tough, for sure.
There are times in, was it the last one we watched? Where it was just like, there's no sound, no one's talking, and there's no, like, description of what's happening. It's just a picture of, like, a landscape and wind for, like, a couple of minutes. Like
The 10th Planet, if you listen to the audio for the 10th Planet, it's very much like that also. That's the other thing that you can do, is a lot of these that exist in recons, maybe you don't want to watch them because you're just watching the screen, but they have them on audio as well. There's I think they've released all of the missing episodes as audio as well, like CDs that you can buy.
And some of them have, like, linking narration, too.
Yeah, many of them do, and it's usually someone that's on the recon that I watched for the Ice Warriors had linking narration on it, and they actually condensed, on this one, they condensed episodes 2 and 3 into 15 minutes, and so it wasn't too difficult to watch.
Huh.
Interesting.
You know, another way to get these are the novelizations, the TARDIS novelizations, and some of those are also, there are narrated versions of those as well. So if you didn't want to watch the episodes or there are too much of it missing, you could listen to the books or read the books if you so choose. And they're republishing a lot of those also. I actually believe I don't think they've done the Ice Warriors. They've republished the Abominable Snowmen. So it's on the shelves now. Or was. I think it still is available.
Yeah, I work at Barnes & Noble. When we send some books back, like we've got too many new copies or whatever, and like they're not selling. They just, like, slowed down on their selling. We this thing called strip list. We, like, instead of returning them, we just take the cover off and return the cover, and then we either recycle the books or give them away to, like, employees. And I just got a Web of Fear novelization, so.
Which will be your first experience with them, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna read it for that episode. I'm gonna compare it to the actual episode and see how it.
And a lot of those books, you get more in them. Like, of course, you guys are on the second Doctor, but Revelation of the Daleks. You have those three episodes towards the end of the series that are all like Revelation, Remembrance, and I always mess them up. But the seventh Doctor Dalek episode, Ben Aronovich, who wrote that episode, wrote the novelization, and he adds a lot of detail into the novel that couldn't make it into the episode. So there's lots of things like that that you get insight into. And of course, Terrence Dix writes tons of those, and Terrence Dix is notorious for being able to put a novel out in like a week. So you can take that for what it is, but he did a lot of those, and they put a lot of them out. I think there's only three novelizations that weren't released in the original Target line. Those were all Douglas Adams books. So those weren't released. They have been since released in some novelization form, but he wouldn't let them do his scripts, and they didn't pay him enough to do them.
I know there's like 9 billion different versions of like Shada, including Dirk Gently.
Right, yeah, because he rewrote Shada like 7 times in his books. And also, incidentally, off the subject, but the third Hitchhiker's Guide novel,
Life, the Universe, and Everything.
Yes, was actually an unused Doctor Who script. It was going to be called Doctor Who and the Cricket Men. So yeah, just ridiculous stuff with that. But yeah, you're right, Dirk Gently. He also used City of Death in that also.
Yeah, Douglas Adams was basically continuously pulling from his own stuff and reorganizing it and being like, also, here's this, which is not a complaint. I love basically almost everything he's ever done.
No, I think he does a great job.
He's always good at like reimagining his own stuff.
Yeah. Taking an idea apart, putting it back together, and now it's a new idea.
I mean, how many incarnations of the Hitchhiker's Guide have there been? A game, a radio series, a book, a movie, a TV show. It was on a towel once.
The TV show is where I was first introduced to it, but the audio series is fantastic as well.
I just recently introduced her to the radio series. She didn't know it was based on a radio series.
It started as a radio series, yeah.
I knew it was a radio series. I didn't know it was the radio series first. I just assumed that the books came first. There was no reason for that assumption.
Well, I think the books are probably the most popular version of it, so that may be why.
There's a really good script book that was released for that, and it's a pretty fantastic way to kind of see it.
The first time I met Tony in real life, because we met each other on the internet, we went to Chicago to hang out with some friends, and I brought that radio script book and like made everybody act out the first episode.
So. I think I was very excited about. I don't know about the other two people who were there.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll indulge this. But anyway, first episode of the Ice Warriors.
Let's talk about the Ice Warriors.
There's a lot of good stuff to get into.
Yeah, episode one, which I've titled Not Another Mastodon.
All right, I'll allow it. Not happily.
It's not another Mastodon, it's the Ice Warriors.
But I'll allow it. So the very first thing is we have fancy new titles, you guys.
It happens at the beginning of every episode.
Yeah.
There's this ice cave, and it's slowly zooming in on it, and then slowly zooms in on the icicle. Which is clearly a painting.
Yes.
I think it looks good until it zooms in on it, and then you're like, well, I can see that that's a painting now. And then it says one, or two, or three.
It says Ice Warriors, and then it says one, and it's at the top of every episode, and it's very exciting. I don't know.
Well, the music on this first episode was, during that scene, was different than the music in the other episodes. And you had this kind of chanting, singy lady that just goes on for a really long time.
So long.
Yeah, it goes on really long. But it's also very different from what we've gotten in the past to this point. So I don't know, that stood out to me during those titles, is that the you have this lady kind of singing, but you don't get that. I don't know if people just complained about it or what, but you don't get it. It's different music cues in the end, or after that.
I would not be shocked if people complain.
And now that you say, yeah, because I remember it being in that first episode, and then I just sort of didn't notice that it wasn't there in the second and third episode, because I was like, I don't know. But yeah, I kind of prefer it without the singing. But the singing is interesting.
Very, yeah, when this episode starts, you're like, oh, this is something different than we've ever gotten before.
I'll say it's better than the last time that they tried to do singing on an episode, which was Last Chance Saloon 9,000 times.
But we open in this base, and there are people in the base who have the best outfits I've ever seen. Oh my gosh.
Incredibly psychedelic.
Yes, they were great.
They're very futuristic from the viewpoint of the 60s. They're 60s future retro.
Well, I'm trying to think, what year does this take place? It's like, does it even say? It's like 2000? I mean, like, we've passed their future at this point, I think.
We're more into the future than they could literally even imagine.
They're in this, like, base. It looks an awful lot like the TARDIS set, but just redressed. I kind of wonder if it was the TARDIS set redressed, because it has the center.
Just because it had that center console thing.
With the computer is the center of the room, and everything sort of circled around it, which kind of reminds me of the TARDIS setup. And I don't know, do we ever really see the TARDIS in this series?
You do not. It materializes sideways. Yeah. So they have to crawl out.
Which is excellent scene of them all trying. They have, like, their heads all popped out at one point, all stacked on top of each other.
I don't know how the physics of that all work, but
yeah, anytime the TARDIS is, like, sideways and the inside of the TARDIS is also sideways, is that, if it's in another dimension, do they match orientation? Why? How does any of that work? I don't know. Thinking about it makes me upset and confused.
But what the scientists are doing is they're keeping tabs on this glacier, right?
Yeah, the glaciers are moving too fast, and they're keeping it in place.
Basically. Bad stuff is happening, and they're making sure it doesn't get worse. And also, speaking of the computer has this very filtered computer voice thing that I can't understand at all.
No. They've been experimenting a lot with voices, and sometimes it's really cool, and sometimes it's like, that's stretched beyond my ability to comprehend what it's saying. Maybe dial it back a little bit.
It's definitely on par with, like, the last time we had the latest Cyberman voice of just,
yeah,
it sounds cool, but I don't understand it. I'm gonna need subtitles for this.
It's definitely cool that they're experimenting, and like I said, sometimes they experiment and you're like, hey, that's really neat and weird. I guess sometimes you have to have times where it doesn't work.
Well, as you get into the next few Cybermen episodes that you'll be watching, some of them are incomprehensible. And it's the same thing. It's a very similar effect to this particular computer.
The computer plot line in this thing is a little wobbly.
It's odd watching it in the future, because it's a huge, like, theme of this is, like, you shouldn't rely too much on computers. But, like, that's not even an option today. Like,
right.
So it just seems old. It just seems like a complaining old man.
Get off my lawn with your computers and your technology.
Which, incidentally, the old man was the one, like, we have to use computers.
Yeah, it's true.
But in a way, I wonder if one of the things that these early Doctor Who stories were wanting to do is they were using science and they were afraid of where things were going and they were making social commentary, and this is part of that. I mean, they kind of got it right in a way. I mean, we do rely on computers that much. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, I mean, not in the way that, and not in this retro futurist way that, that they obviously foresaw it happening, but it is one of those, like, well, they kind of got it right. Because like you said, we do rely on them so much.
Totally. But I'm always of the mind of, like, and this is one thing where I'm going to be antagonistic. I'm going to be opposed to a lot of really good sci-fi. But I'm always of the mind of, let's not be afraid of technology. I mean, definitely, like, you can't let it dictate all of our choices like they do in the episode. But it's cool that I have a computer in my pocket and that I can Google things that I have questions about. That's awesome, and I don't see that as a negative.
Well, I think this is more akin to a GPS taking you in the wrong location, and then you get shot. So it's that kind of when technology fails you, and I think that's the kind of thing there. I don't disagree with you for sure. I completely agree with you. At the same time, you rely on it. We all rely on it so much. What are you going to do when the computer can't help? Again, I'm not making a statement when it fails, but I'm just saying, I mean, if you look at it with the GPS example, you can kind of see where they're going with it, I think.
We did have the GPS fail on us literally yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
We were trying to find this trail.
Hiking trail.
We found, like, an address for it, and it's just, like, a dead end where, like, the trail is on the other side of the dead end, but you can't park there or anything, and someone had posted a sign that was like, hey, put this address into your GPS and park there. Please stop stopping here. Because it's just a dead end in the middle of, like, a neighborhood, like, in a suburban area. And yeah. Someone got fed up of people just parking their cars there because their GPS is like, well, you've arrived. So there's definitely something to that.
But it's very nice that they put up the sign.
I was going to say, then we did just put that address back into the GPS and found the parking lot, which we would not have been able to do on our own. It's a double-edged sword.
I think the question would be, did they use a computer and print the sign out?
No. It was written in poster board and marker.
Well, there you go. They have to use the normal technology of the day to do that.
It's a combination of technology and human ability. That's what makes things perfect.
All right.
All right. So, the next scene we get is we are at the glacier, and there's these ice driller characters. They're drilling through the ice, and that's where the title of this episode comes from. They see something inside the ice, and one of them's like, "Oh, not another mastodon," which I thought was hilarious. I'd still be excited if there was, like, there's so many mastodon in here. Another one? Yeah.
Can I take this one home?
We've got so many, we have some to spare, right?
The idea of someone being disappointed by a mastodon is outrageous to you.
It is. Who would be disappointed in seeing a mastodon?
That guy.
But it's not. It's an ice warrior.
Well, it's a Martian.
I think it's great that that's what they're called, because they are just Martians. And they were just called ice warriors because they found them in the ice. And that's got nothing to do with how this creature functions or says anything about it as a creature. It's just humans were like, we found it in the ice and it's a warrior.
But incidentally, that's what we call them for the rest of the series. Even though it was just like a couple guys on a podunk planet who was like the ice warrior.
I love that. I love how names just stick.
That's how naming things works in real life. It's just some guy's like, I discovered this. My name's Bob, so I'm called the Bob guy. And everyone's like, all right, that's fine.
Yeah, but it doesn't explain why everyone else in the universe also calls them ice warriors.
That's true.
Because they named them. And that's when next time someone is like, oh yeah, I've heard about these guys. They're called, the only thing we have on record is these two random guys who had encountered them before. They called them ice warriors.
It reminds me a lot of when in, was it Galaxy 4?
Yes.
Where Vicky names the little robots Chumblies, and then everyone just starts calling them Chumblies.
Like even the villain calls them Chumblies.
And the people who own the Chumblies start calling them Chumblies. It's amazing.
And it's brilliant. That's just how, once you give a thing a name in Doctor Who, that's it, done.
It's
everyone
named
throughout the universe also knows.
Now is when the TARDIS shows up. Like, it took a while for them to even show up in the serial.
That scene of them all just sort of, like, climbing out of the TARDIS is beautiful, and I love it.
One of them says, oh no, not again, speaking of Douglas Adams.
I think it's because they've landed somewhere cold, and Jamie is
pleased. Yeah. Because, like, yeah, the last serial was the Abominable Snowman, and Jamie's like, let's go somewhere warm. And then they don't. They literally land right next to a glacier. And then Jamie steps on the doctor's hand. which is adorable. I love Jamie and the Doctor so much. They are a great pair. I don't understand my notes at all. Plastic dome. Dome burglars.
The plastic dome is the base. You see the base from the outside, and it's this cool dome-shaped thing. And then you see they're not burglars.
I know that now. At the time, I was like, are they just stealing stuff from this base? These two guys leave, which are, I forget their names. But they're two guys that will become important later on in this serial.
Scavengers is what they're referred to.
Scavengers. Yeah, but one of them used to be a scientist who worked at the base, right?
Yeah, but what's his name? That's basic information that I'm utterly blanking on. Yeah.
Is it Penley?
Penley.
Penley? Sure. Let's go with that. I'm terrible at names on this show. I actually do better on the reconstruction episodes when they have the little scrolling bar.
Because you read
their
names.
And I'm like, oh, hey, that's how you spell and say that. But this one didn't have... We had the animated reconstruction, so I never saw their names. So I don't remember any of them. The scavenger guys, that's who they are.
They're the scavengers. There's a scientist named Penley, and there's...
His buddy.
Yep. His friend, who's more of a scavenger. The scientist just kind of defected.
They're
kind of
like a married couple, in a way.
Yeah, they're a little adorable. So, like, the one scavenger does not believe in science and hates all the scientists. And he just sort of puts up with Penley because he's like, well, you also don't like them. So I'll take you in and stuff. But they squabble a lot and bicker in a way that's cute.
And they're both very hairy in their own ways.
That is also true.
One's very caveman looking, and the other one's a little more dignified looking, but still pretty hairy.
He's getting there.
He's a little more
patchy.
He's
working on his caveman look.
It's like, you'll get there, buddy.
Wait.
Oh, right. They call the ice driller characters, call into the base, and like, hey, we found this body. We want to bring it in.
Oh my god, yes. This scene totally happens.
Yeah, it's and they're like, up. He's like, no, we don't want it. And he's like, what? What? I can't. And then, like, covers his hand, the camera with his hand. Like,
which I want to talk about the camera as we're talking about technology and imagining the future. It's great. It's exactly what you want out of someone picturing the future and getting so close. They have, like, these wristwatches that do video communication, but they look like almost like an old retro TV. Mm-hmm. And I love them so much. It's everything I want out of classic Doctor Who.
I love retro future technology.
I do. But you're like, that's, you know, that's dead on. That's totally...
I mean, that's FaceTime. They called it.
But anyway, they're bringing this guy back. And what happened? There's an avalanche? There's an avalanche while they're trying to get this guy out of the ice. And one of the guys just dies. He just, like, falls off the cliff and dies. And no one seems all that bothered by it.
Like, one of them literally makes a joke about it.
They're like, ah, he might be dead. And he's like, yeah, and I'm gonna get... He better not be dead or I'm gonna get in so much trouble. That's as much concern as anybody shows for this character that just died. Like, seconds ago.
The one of the scavengers gets hurt in it, too. The more caveman-y one. Because they're there for some reason? I don't... I guess they were going back home and then stumbled across the avalanche. Before that happens, though, the TARDIS crew goes into the science base.
Well, before they even go in, the doctor's like, hey, there's some weird shit happening here. We're gonna go towards it. And Victoria goes, can you just leave it? And the doctor goes, no. That's not an oversimplification or an exaggeration. Victoria's like, no, just leave it. The doctor just, no. And then keeps going. And I'm like, that's it. That's the show. There's something weird. I'm gonna go poke it.
And then he goes into, like, the base, the control center, and, like, stuff's going crazy. And he just immediately is into it. It's like, oh, do this. Oh, what's this? And running around. And
he's running around to different control panels and flipping switches, and, like, people sitting there, like, looking up at him, like, wait, what are you doing?
Who are you?
One of the things about this is that I really like is that, to me, is what the character of the Doctor is. And when Patrick Troughton did that so well, one of the most common pictures that we see from Patrick Troughton is actually from this episode, and it has him kind of looking all curious, looking at the camera as a publicity shot, but he's over this little meter-looking thing, and which is in the episode, and it shows up several times in the control room. But that idea of, like, his curiosity and pressing the right button and those kinds of things are in this. But him, that scene is so Doctor Who, and so the Doctor, the character of the Doctor, it's something that we see. He does it in many different ways. Later you'll see Tom Baker do it, and he owns a room when he does it. You see Peter Davison do it. You see every Doctor do it. Sylvester McCoy just owns it also, and there are very different ways that they do it. But it all comes down to this scene, really. Or not just the scene, but but this is one of those first times that you see the Doctor just kind of like going in, acting like there's nothing happening, like he's just supposed to be there, and people kind of think he is, and that seems fantastic in terms of like historical scenes in Doctor Who.
He's just like, hey, I'm here to figure out this weird problem and also maybe save you. That will also probably happen.
I just like sciencey things.
I just came in here because you had a lot of buttons. The reason why he is sort of frantically running around is because he knows what he's doing, and the scientists there don't.
They're relying too much on the computer.
Well, Penley is their expert, and he defected. They have like the other scientists there who are trying their best but don't have all of the knowledge. And the glacier was like right up on the base, I think, at this point. It was definitely some emergency that he just came in and averted by being like, oh, you have to do this, 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 and this. And they're like, I guess we'll listen to you. You seem confident, so.
But every time the Doctor is like, you should do this, they're like, the main guy, who by the way is this guy with a cane.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like a broke leg or something. Got a big leg cast. Every time he's like, well, we have to check the computer first. We have to check the computer first. Every time. Then I was like, fine, check your precious computer.
He'll tell you the same thing I just told you.
Also, the king guy is like just thoroughly overwhelmed by all this and has to go sit on his vibro chair. Was that just to be like a metaphor for his weakness?
No, I think it was kind of implied that it was Penley's fault.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, I guess that probably is the implication there.
I mean, I don't think they came out and said it. He just has a couple of lines of like, yeah, there are consequences when you act rashly sort of thing. He's like, you know, I know that more than most, kind of.
Ah, I didn't pick up on that. That makes sense. You're smart.
That is what I read into it. I don't. Anyway, the Doctor doing science is great, and we love it.
Then that's basically when the whole avalanche thing happens, as right after that. They're trying to figure out what to do with the TARDIS crew. If you guys have been listening to the podcast, the last three serials have had unfortunate racism.
Mostly it's just us casting white people to play everyone and yeah. Anyone.
Chris Cherry had watched it already and said, no unfortunate racism in this one. And then we get to this scene where they're like trying to figure out what to do with the TARDIS crew. And they mention something about sort of shipping them off to Africa.
Victoria goes, no, not Africa. Because that's the worst, like it's the worst thing Victoria can imagine.
Is going to Africa.
Not even like, they don't say just Africa. Just the general concept of Africa is upsetting.
Like, she doesn't know why that's bad. She just, oh no, not Africa.
No, because it is implied that it's some kind of, like, there's something there. Like a holding cell, a prison, a work camp, there's something, that's something where you send people. But that's not what she's upset about. She's upset about the idea of Africa. And that's it.
But you also have to remember where she's coming from. She is basically from, like, Imperial England. When she thinks, and that's the thing, we're talking about something that takes place in the future, and she's still talking from Imperial England perspective. And in Imperial England, Africa was pretty much, I mean, it wasn't a colony, but I mean, that was that whole like, ah, tally-ho, let's go and shoot something and go to the jungle. I mean, she's used to pretty much a life of ease, and why would she want to go to Africa? I don't necessarily think that was racism so much. I mean, it could be read into it, but I think it was like Imperial racism more than like the racism of the 60s.
Victoria definitely has a very specific idea of Africa. It's just a weird, it's a very jarring moment to be like, oh, right, you're definitely from the Victorian era. This was definitely made in the 50s, 60s. All of those things kind of are like, hit you in the face in this scene.
Just an out of context, the line, oh no, not Africa, is just weird.
All of those, you know, that Imperial stuff, you're like, oh, right.
Yeah.
That's where this stuff is coming from.
I would go further and say that there was some unintentional sexism in this.
Oh, that's par for the course.
Well, sure, right. But specifically in the scene we've already talked about with the cane guy picking a new scientist and basically saying, well, I guess you'll do to the female character that he is, that's taking the role of the other guy.
Penley, yeah.
It may not have been sexism so much, but I don't know. You've got all the females wearing pretty high skirts in this office, and you know you're dealing a lot with that. But yeah, I mean, I would say there may be some sexism going on, but I didn't No, but I could take your point about the Africa comment.
I mean, it's definitely, I'm not saying it's you know, out of place or out of context. It just, it's...
But it's there.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
I can buy it.
So then they start doing tests on they test to see what the doctor knows. They give him, like, this really complicated question.
And they test it up against the computer.
Yeah, well, they, like, give him a countdown, too.
This might actually be one of my favorite scenes of the entire thing. I love this.
He is, like, basically waiting for the clock to go down, and he's just like, oh, yeah, it's this. At, like, the last second. Like, he probably knew from the very beginning and was just messing with them.
He was just grandstanding. He was just being theatrical. I buy that.
So it did also kind of remind me a lot of, we just finished watching Series 8 of Doctor Who. The episode where they're on the train.
Mummy on the Orient Express, yeah.
It reminded me a lot of that, the scene where the Doctor has to figure out what the mummy is in that, like, short span of time it's coming for him. And there's the countdown. Except this was a lot more funny and less stressful.
Terrifying.
But still, it reminded me of that, of just, like, you have a limited amount of time and the Doctor's, like, running around just, like, is it this? Does this factor in? What about this? And, it could be this. And then he's just like, boom, it's this. Like, last second.
It's a really good showcase of, like, making being clever feel like it has stakes. Making being clever into something of an action scene.
They bring the body in. It's melting.
They've got a very specific dealy
melt it. Yeah, they put it in a thing. Then Jamie gets kind of weird with Victoria. It's funny, but it's also a little weird.
Oh, yeah.
He's just messing with her.
He's teasing her about the short skirts that you mentioned, actually. He's being a little gross. He's like, I like them. I like those short skirts. I think they look great. And Victoria's like, yeah, of course you do. And that's really inappropriate. Jamie's like, I think you'd look good in them.
She's like, what?
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
It's mostly just him messing with her, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah. We'll gloss over it for Jamie. That's the end, right?
Yeah, and then the Ice Warrior comes to life and has a Muppet mouth. He looks like a grandpa with, like, out teeth.
Without teeth.
Just like...
Yeah, head kind of flops over, and the mouth... I don't know how to describe it other than very puppety.
It's a very puppety mouth. And that's the end of episode one, Not Another Mastodon.
Which when you see them in action, like, the Ice Warrior in full action, it's pretty damn cool.
Just this one close-up just made me, I don't know, giggle a little because of the Muppety mouth. It's an interesting thing. It's just not what I expected.
Because the mouths do move when they talk.
Sometimes. Yeah, that was a mechanism that was, I'm not sure how it worked exactly, but it was, I don't know, like under their chin or something, and it would mimic something opening. Very bizarre the way they did it. But yeah, it is very puppety, as you said.
It's an interesting effect. That it works most of the time.
As you say, when it works, it's really impressive.
Yeah, they eventually go to prosthetics for that and just put a little green makeup on their mouth there. But for this one, for whatever reason, they had this kind of Muppety thing where it just kind of opens. But yeah, I mean, it still looks pretty impressive, though.
It's definitely... Oh, it's creepy.
There's something very unsettling about it.
And we are now into episode two, which I have probably given the worst title out of all of these. Escapades in Computer Land. Just because somebody says Escapades in Computer Land, and I like that line. It has nothing to do with the episode. Very, very little. And this one is the one that we watched that was... this is the first of the missing episodes in the serial.
The animation that we watched was very nice.
Yeah,
I always feel
really
the need
good.
To say that. It's very smooth and... Yeah. I liked it a lot.
I don't think it's as good as the Cybermen episodes we watched, but it's definitely better than the Reign of Terror.
Reign of Terror is by far not my least favorite.
Reign of Terror was the worst animation, but this one was pretty good. It was pretty smooth. What I enjoy is when they do, like...
They did a lot of small movements.
Small movements and camera movements, and they, like, really paid attention to, like, how it looks as, like, a thing instead of just, oh, we're recreating it. We're just slapping it up there so there's something visual going on. They, like, paid attention to, like, the composition and everything, and I've always felt like that's good, and they don't always do that.
I feel like a lot of it, especially with Reign of Terror, I definitely feel like it was, like, they weren't given enough time and resources, and they were just like, fine, this is what we can do.
It was like mostly just close-ups and also hiding their mouth a lot.
It's like, this is how we can get it done for what we have, which is a recurring theme in Doctor Who.
And you said you watched Reconstruction, right?
Yeah, they condensed 2 and 3 into one episode, or in just 15 minutes, really. It was just a quick, really, this is what you missed.
Like, that could be done.
I think any cereal, most cereals that are more than four episodes don't always need to be more than four episodes.
Oh, no, no, they really don't. I mean, that's one of the things that you get with Doctor Who. You get a lot, especially in these early days, of just filler. You get two or three episodes that really don't need to be there with a six-parter.
Yeah. Well, and I think a huge part of that is we're watching it in a way that's so counterintuitive to the way that it was meant to be watched. Like, a filler episode a week is like, that's fine. It was a filler episode. It was whatever. When you're, like, trying to watch one story all at once, you're like, why was that entire episode in there?
Right. Binge-watching is...
was not what this was set up for at all.
I mean, I don't think there was binge-watching in the 60s.
Well, I mean, that's why we have missing episodes, because they thought they were disposable.
And that's probably why they didn't worry too much if, like, an effect was not, like, super great. They're like, eh, it's gonna air once, we're done.
Like a Zarby running into a camera.
Yeah.
TV's expensive. We're not gonna reshoot that.
At the beginning of this episode, Jamie fights the Ice Warrior and is immediately knocked out. The computer evaluates the doctor? What does it say?
Yeah, it has a lot of very interesting things to say, which is basically, he knows a lot, so he might be helpful, but he's also pretty dangerous and unreliable. And so I was like, all right, I trust the computer now. that sounds like a pretty good evaluation.
Pretty succinct there. The Ice Warrior grabs Victoria, questions Victoria about what's going on. And that's when we get the first mention that...
she totally gets kidnapped.
That it's a Martian because it says it wants to return to the Red Planet. I don't think it ever really says Mars. It just says...
No, I think he says Red Planet, and Victoria's like, Mars? And that's it.
And they're like, I don't know, we call it by a different name. That's your Earth name.
See, now I'm really, really concerned about what the Ice Warriors call themselves. It's not Martian either. We have no idea.
Read God Engine by Craig Hinton. It goes into all of the culture of the Ice Warriors.
I'm so glad that exists. That's the fun thing to me about Doctor Who, is that, like, there's so much of it that if you're like, how come, you know, this thing was never explored? There's always like, oh, it was.
Well, and the other thing is, if you really think about it, you've got a lot of other things going on Mars. You've got the pyramids of Mars, which has Sutekh hanging out, so you probably have a society that's based on Osirian lore, just like we do. So, all kinds of things that kind of mesh together. That's a little ways down the road for you guys, but...
if there's some question you have, there's somebody that's answered
it. Somebody's thought about it, too, and they probably wrote something official.
I've heard that there's this, like, one novel writer who's basically what he does is just try to explain everything.
Like, inconsistencies and stuff?
Yeah.
You've got a few that are doing that, but you've got some of them that are just like, there's so much canon in there. You've got Gary Russell, who has been involved in Doctor Who for years and years, and he has so much canon that he can basically tie anything to anything. But there's lots of guys that can do that also, so, yeah.
There's one in particular I remember reading about. They're like, he does it too much and he doesn't actually tell, like, a good story. He's just too busy making everything make sense.
Oh, John Peel. He writes a lot of Dalek novels. He wrote one called War of the Dalek, which is probably the worst Doctor Who story ever made. They retcon every Dalek episode that had taken place before that.
I love that you had that name right there after the description.
That guy. It's that guy.
I'm totally lost as to where we are in the actual episode. Let's just talk about books, you guys.
So the Ice Warrior is talking to Victoria, and it's basically like, I'm going to keep you as a hostage. I'm going to get the other Ice Warriors, and then we're going to figure out what we're going
to
do.
I also would like to say, at this point, it seems like they could not be bad. Yeah, sure, I mean, he's taken Victoria, which is shitty, but...
he's taking Victoria, and he's knocked out Jamie, but hey, like, he doesn't know what's happening.
He just woke up, and, crash-landed. All he really wants to do is go wake up his crew. Victoria's like, so you go get your crew, and you can leave and go home. They're like, yeah, we'll go home, or we'll conquer the planet. It depends. We'll talk it over. And I was like, oh... okay.
Well, at least they're going to talk about it. That's nice.
They haven't made up their minds yet. They got to see where they are.
Since we've gotten to a conversation with the Ice Warrior, let's talk about the way the Ice Warriors talk for a second. Because on the one hand, it's okay. But on the other hand, it's, again, hard to understand. They hiss a lot. And there's also, like, a hiss noise.
That seems to be independent of them speaking. I don't know if it's supposed to be their suits.
Because they'll be talking, but there is also, like, this steady...
I think that's meant to be their breathing.
It, like, conflicts with their dialogue sometimes, and they're just like, they're also whispering.
They're whispering and hissing, and then there is that breathing over it.
Which is sometimes louder than their actual dialogue.
So again, an experiment that is kind of cool, but ultimately unintelligible.
And I feel like they tweak it throughout the serial a little bit. Like, by the end of it, I don't think it's as bad as it was.
Oh, yeah,
at the
totally.
Beginning.
The first episode's unintelligible, but the end of the episode, you can understand them. So it's something that somebody, like, sat down and, like, just tweaked throughout filming. That's what happens when you have to do things as you go.
Of course, this is another one where the actors in the suits aren't saying the dialogue. So you've got someone off screen doing the dialogue. Eventually, the actors in the suits will be doing the dialogue when you see, not in this serial, but later when you see them again. They change the way the Ice Warriors are done quite a bit through the years, but the voice stays relatively the same.
Does it still have that, like, breathing noise behind it?
I think they make it more natural, so they're kind of breathing when they're not talking, so you have more of a "Let me tell you," blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. So
they're not breathing and talking at the same time.
Yeah, they're just, so the breathing thing is something that they, it's part of it because, and I think it's even explained at one point how they're breathing a different, you know, they're used to more oxygen or less oxygen or whatever. So they're breathing heavy. So it's something that changes.
Yeah, like, it's like the idea of it's not bad. The execution is just a little off.
I'm always hesitant to complain about anything in Classic Who because the whole thing of it is they never stop tweaking things, and like, they get there eventually. They experiment a lot, and sometimes what you're seeing is like the roughest version of a concept. By the time we see the Ice Warriors again, we just saw them in New Who, you're like, okay, that concept's been refined.
And they still look fairly similar. It's not like as drastic of a change as the snowmen. Went from being Yeti to literally snowman.
Oh man, I love the Yeti so much. I feel like the world needs more villains with just the cuddliest looking henchmen. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you're adorable! That's a good plan if you're a villain.
Look up, when you have a chance, Beep the Meep, which was a comic book villain in the Doctor Who magazine, and he is the cuddliest villain he will ever have, you will ever see. It's fantastic. Beep the Meep is amazing. You would love Beep the Meep.
I'm so excited right now.
There's an audio where they do it, and the idea is he's very cuddly. He's like, "Oh, I'm your friend." Da, da, da. And then, like, in the next line, he'll go like, "And I'll kill you."
Yes.
Yeah, Beep the Meep's fantastic. And that was actually in one of the first Doctor Who magazine comic strips, I think the second or third. But there are audio. There's one audio. It was a Doctor Who magazine giveaway, actually, where they did Beep the Meep, and it's fantastic.
All right, is it called The Ratings War?
Yes, Ratings War.
I'm looking it up.
it's fantastic. But yes, he's the cuddliest of all Doctor Who villains.
That sounds perfect.
There needs to be a coalition of the cute Doctor Who monsters. So you have, like, Beep the Meep, you'd have the Abominable Snowman, and you'd have
the Adipose.
Adipose. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That would be amazing.
Oh my god, they could have tiny little evil parties where they're just really cute, but they're like talking about world domination in tiny squeaky voices. This is such a good plan.
I think we've killed Tony.
You've totally lost me.
Anyway, the Ice Warriors. So back to the scavengers for a second. They are staying in a plant museum where they're growing plants that are kind of dying out, like tomatoes.
Yeah, there are no plants on the world anymore. We totally, like, glossed over that plot point. Basically, humans are shitty, and we're like, hey, we figured out how to make things work, like, more productively. Is it that, like, housing is what we made everything? And that's why there's no plants?
I don't remember. Just, generally, we screwed it up.
We're like, oh, we don't need plants anymore, because we figured out how to, like, make food. And then we're like, oh, shit, plants make oxygen, and we need that. Our bad. And that's why the whole thing with the glaciers is happening. That's because we messed up the planet.
That sounds like something that would happen.
But yeah, they're in this museum, and it's, like, where, like, the last surviving plants are.
The Pinley character is helping, because that one guy, caveman guy, got under the avalanche there. And Pinley's taking care of him, and he's like, I'm gonna go get some drugs for you, because you need drugs. You're not doing too great.
He's going to die, basically, if he doesn't get treatment.
And then the warrior is taking Victoria to the spacecraft, which is in the ice, and he wants Victoria's help, and he threatens her with a sonic dampener.
Yeah, I got very excited.
Anytime, like, something
things
sonic,
are getting sonic.
We're, like, we're so close. Like,
the Doctor's been using the screwdriver. He's used a screwdriver in, like, the past four episodes. This is the second sonic weapon we've seen. The idea is so close to being there.
Just, when are those two things gonna touch, you know? When are they gonna meet?
Ice Warriors are known for their sonic weapons, so they have sonic weapons. That's their thing.
Because they have a sonic, I don't know what it's called, but it's like a sonic cannon
thing. I think it might be called a sonic cannon.
Oh, there you go. But this is the second time we've seen some kind of sonic weapon in Doctor Who. So I'm just like waiting. Every time I see a screwdriver or a sonic weapon, I'm like, you guys are totally toying with this idea. It's just a matter of time. But it's not till like, what? Who's the first one who has one?
Patrick Troughton has one in The War Games, which is his last story. And then it doesn't look like a sonic screwdriver though. But of course, John Pertwee, he uses it all the time. And that's where you get it in the third Doctor. And then you have it until the fifth Doctor when he destroys it and loses an old friend.
Aww. I knew three had it. I wasn't sure if two ever got it, but it sounds like he did.
He's been using screwdriver, like a normal screwdriver.
He's been carrying a screwdriver around with him, yeah.
He's used it in every serial for like the past 4 to 5.
You actually see it in the War Games. You actually see him use it, and he uses it to take a screw out of something.
That's fantastic.
Is he the only one who's ever used it as an actual screwdriver?
That I can think of, yes.
So, meanwhile, Arden. Arden is the ice driller guy.
The one who found the
the body.
The body, and he's the one who was only mildly inconvenienced by having killed the guy.
I also think he's the one that was saddened by the, like, not another mastodon. And he's also the guy that, like, I can't hear you. Gonna do what I'm gonna want to do. So Arden's kind of just...
he's kind of a dick.
He does his own thing. No one's gonna stop him. But him and Jamie are out looking for the spacecraft because they don't know where it is, but they're gonna try to find it. Now, Penley's out there.
Because Penley's on his way back to the base.
To get drugs.
Where they have a machine that just makes shit. It can make any sort of chemical. Yeah. You, like, put in the chemical formula for something and it makes it. We haven't quite gotten there yet, but the doctor has a scene with it. He's like, is this a chemical thingy? And the guy's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, great, I need something. And he types his formula into it and it does its little science thing and spits something out. And he's like, what is that? And the doctor takes it, drinks it, and he's like, oh, it's water. And then throws the cup. Like, that's very rude. This place is not your trash can. But then he puts another equation in there and makes what he needs. But I thought that scene was really fun.
The warrior and Victoria actually haven't left yet. The warrior grabs a thing from the base, hits Clint, who is the guy with the leg cast, hits him over the head with the box, and then they escape. They haven't gotten out of the base yet. But Penley shows up, helps Clint out, and then he gets the drugs for his buddy. And then the doctor tries to talk to Penley, like, hey, they need you here because you're an expert on this and they need your help. And then he's like, nah, I'm not gonna do that. I don't want to help. I'm just gonna go back and take care of my buddy. I don't really want to be involved in this.
And the doctor's like, literally for the world, like the whole world is in danger if you don't help. And he's like, that's all right.
And so now the warrior is at the ice thing and is starting to de-ice the
rest of the warriors.
Yeah, which is the spacecraft. And that's the end of episode 2. Now we're into episode 3. De-iced, iced baby.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not.
He laughed.
Well, you know, it's quaint.
So Jamie and Arden are still looking for the spacecraft. At one point, Arden gives his sort of motivation or whatever, and he's like, we have to do this. Like, they killed that one guy who fell off the avalanche. I can't forget that. Laugh about it. Sure. Forget about it. No.
He suddenly cares.
Plot point.
And then Clint's on the, like, communicator with him and, like, tries to cheer him up. But he's, like, really bad about it. Every, like, time Clint tries to do things, it's very awkward and he's always seems uncomfortable.
I identify with him. I don't think his name is Clint. I think it's Clint.
That you just said the same word twice.
Well, one was an I, one's with an E.
This is with an E. Because it's like, the future.
That's not your fault. There. Don't be cry.
There's also lots of references to him being a robot, which...
you didn't get.
I didn't get. It's saying that he's too reliant on the computer.
Joe kept going, is he a robot? Is it going to turn out that he's a robot? They keep making references to him being a robot.
I literally did not get the idea that they were saying he's too reliant on the computer until the very last episode. This is when we get a little more backstory about Penley. This is like when we really start to figure out his whole deal. He had a breakdown and defected. But he's gotten his buddy better, so that's good. Yay!
The female scientist, whose name is Jane, also has followed him back and asks Penley to come back.
The whole thing is just trying to get Penley to come back, and it takes him the entire serial to be like, yeah, all right, I guess. He's very resistant to to doing it.
Meanwhile, the Ice Warriors are going to use Victoria as bait, or everybody else from the base, which is great because she escapes and mm-hmm. she uses one of, like, the video comms to talk to them. The Ice Warriors are like, oh, we should shoot her. And one of the Ice Warriors is like, no, that's literally our plan. She's helping our plan. They're like, oh, I guess you're right. Which is actually the cliffhanger and then the beginning of the next. The cliffhanger is like, hey, we're gonna shoot her because she's using comms. The beginning of the next episode is like, no, because that's counterintuitive to our plan.
Oh, and then this bit is where, before she escapes, the Jamie and Arden find her. They find the spacecraft. Then they immediately get shot. Jamie and Arden both get shot. Victoria's a bit upset about this. That's when Pinley finds Jamie and Arden, covers up Arden because Arden's dead, but then drags Jamie away because Jamie's not dead. Because, like, one shot and it, like, hit Arden full on, but sort of, like, glanced off and barely got Jamie, kind of. A ricochet of lessened impact.
They have this thing that they're using to keep the glaciers pushed back. Everyone, they need to do this at the same time as a bunch of other people so that they can keep bad shit from happening. They're waiting on Arden to find the spaceship. They're theorizing that the spaceship probably runs on nuclear reactors. And if they use, I think it's an ionization beam is what they call it. Mm-hmm. If they use that on the spaceship, shit could blow up and it'd be really, really bad. There's this whole tension of like, we only have so much time to wait before we have to use the ionization beam before the glacier fucks shit up. But if we use it, everything might explode.
Right.
And so we're waiting to hear back, but we're also running out of time.
And the computer's being weird about it.
There's this whole thing that the computer is playing for time because the computer doesn't want to get exploded.
Also, somewhere in here, I don't remember what happens, but I have a note about it, and I want to talk about it. The doctor is worried about Jamie and Victoria. He says that he has considerable affection for them.
I know, it made me really happy. But then anyway, like I said, this episode ends.
She escapes and finds Arden's wristwatch.
Which communicator.
She doesn't really know how to use it because she's from the past.
Yes.
But she figures it out because Victoria is smart. Which she's figured out technology pretty quickly. Because in the last serial, she figured out the scanner on the TARDIS.
Her dad was a scientist. So she's true.
I got this.
She just picks up on things.
Dad built a time machine out of mirrors.
Well, the doctor only takes clever people.
She's pretty clever.
We open episode 4.
Which I have titled Snow Way Out.
Just so bad.
No?
No. And like I said, they decide not to kill her because that doesn't make any sense. While Victoria's on the communicator, Clint is asking about, you're there at the spacecraft. What kind of engines does it run on? Victoria doesn't know.
Like, the doctor is trying to be very, asking her questions, but, being very nice and helpful and, it's okay. We're gonna help you. What's going on? And then Clint just keeps butting in, no, tell us everything! Again, he's just, very socially inept.
He's very severe, too.
Yeah, very angry and just tell us everything. What's going on? Victoria's like, stop yelling at me.
But they lose communication and one of the Ice Warriors comes out to go get her and she hides, which is my favorite Doctor Who trope ever, which is she's not even slightly behind something.
Hiding in plain sight.
No one can see her now.
Well, I do want to point out, and I honestly don't know why this is like that, but the Ice Warrior that comes after her, there are three or four Ice Warrior costumes that we see. So you have two that look like the standard Ice Warrior. Then you have these two that have these gigantic heads. They're short, and they have these gigantic heads that are about double the size of the other Ice Warriors. And I've seen those for years and years. There's a lot of publicity photos with them and things like that. And I don't know why those existed. It was almost like they made two and they're like, no, that's completely wrong, but we don't have time to completely redo them. So make two more and make them the right way, because they're so bizarre looking, those particular costumes. At first, I was like, well, they just look big because they're small. And I was looking at it. You see them a lot in the very last scene of the last episode. They are literally double the size of the heads of the regular Ice Warriors that we see talk. It's bizarre. Really weird.
I don't think I noticed that. I have to go back and look now.
Yeah, I'm interested to see the differences there. So is this the one that's chasing?
Yes, that's one of the ones. And incidentally, those Ice Warriors don't speak, the two that have the gigantic heads.
Oh, interesting.
I wonder if they're trying to incorporate more puppetry or something mechanisms in the head and it didn't work out.
And so they just were
we'll just make different heads.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's really bizarre. I've always wondered that. I've never actually done a lot of research on it, but I've always seen it and it's kind of weird.
But at this point, they can't really wait anymore. They've just found out that Arden's dead and not coming back. and Victoria doesn't know what's going on. So the doctor's going to go to the spaceship, figure out, you know, what kind of engines it has and if they can use the ionizer.
But this is when he does gets the water thing and then makes the thing. He's like, I'm going to make a poison for the Martians. It's a Martian poison. Poison for the Martians. Poison for Kuzco.
Okay.
And
he makes it in, like, this little vial, yeah.
He's like, considering, like, this is what they would have to be like to survive on Mars, this is something that would presumably hurt them. I don't even remember what it was that he made. Basically, he's made, like, a little liquid poison weapon.
Which, and then they're like, you're not even going to bring any weapons? Like, and the guns? Doctor's like, no, not going to bring any weapons. I was like, well, you've got, all right.
Because he wants to be a prisoner? He wants to get captured. Because that's his plan.
So, Penley's trying to help Jamie. Jamie's slowly waking up.
Jamie cannot feel his legs.
No, he can't move at this point. And the only way that he can really get treated is if they bring him back to the base.
I also want to mention that when Victoria's running away from the Ice Warrior, the ice caves look pretty good until one scene where it's clearly bubble wrap.
It looks good until she has to interact with it, is the thing. Yeah. It looks really good when she's running through it, and then there's a scene where she, like, breaks through the ice.
Climbs over a thing or
something. Yeah, and when she breaks through the ice, it, you know, feels like cling wrap. Anytime she's running through it, it looks great, and anytime it's like, oh, and then we're going to have you interact with a piece, and it's like, oh.
And then the writers didn't know how to get her out of the situation, so there was a convenient avalanche that landed on top of the Ice Warrior.
The Ice Warrior. And now at least one Ice Warrior is dead.
Speaking of weird designs, the Ice Warrior is talking about to another Ice Warrior about the ship and stuff and worried about it and hoping that they'll be able to take off and stuff. But he, like, gets so worried that he, like, ducks his head down inside of his armor.
Yeah, they do a thing. Thought it was in this one, but I didn't notice it. They do this thing where they laugh, like, and they just start, like, putting their heads in their armor. Because when they first came out, they were really meant to be, like, turtles, was the idea. You know, I think they've kind of since been... There still are, but people think of them more as lizards. But there's this one, and maybe it is in the next one that they're in, but they start laughing, and they go... and they keep ducking their heads in their armor. I thought it was this one, but now that I'm thinking, it may not be. But yeah, the armor thing is something that they do quite a bit in the next one. But then it kind of disappears once they show up again. They never do it again. But
I like it though. I think
it's funny.
It was designed that way because of the turtle connection. But they used it for a bit.
They do definitely read more as lizards.
Yeah, because of that hiss thing.
What? And I guess like you'd need to be bulkier to be a turtle.
Well, they do have like the shell.
That's true.
I don't think they were meant to be turtles. I think they were meant to be turtle-like, with the idea of, like, the exo-armor shell kind of thing. But because there's always been a discussion in Doctor Who, is that armor, or is it just the way they are? Like, and of course, in the new series, they kind of let you know what that was. They answer that, but it's always been one of those, like, is that their armor, or is that... Now, when you meet the Ice Lords, which you'll meet in the next time you meet them, they are definitely not armored like that. I prefer Ice Lords. The Ice Lords are fantastic.
I always get excited about hearing about future things that we're going to get to. I'm like, I can't wait to get to that.
There's so much. There's so much of it.
So the caveman scavenger has decided that he's going to befriend the warriors because he's like, they hate the science people. I hate the science people.
They'll help me.
They'll help
It'll
me.
It'll be fine.
That's almost an exact quote.
I know.
That's the whole of his plan. That's it. He sees no flaw with it.
And so that's what he does. He goes to them and is like, hey, I'm on your side. Let's do a thing together. And he takes Victoria to him, too, because he bumps into her.
Victoria, this frustrates me so much. She's gotten out. The one Ice Warrior that was chasing her conveniently died. And then she runs into this guy and he's like, here's the plan. I'm going to take you back to the Ice Warriors and it's going to be great. Guys, it's not great. I got so frustrated. Do not take her back. We just got her out of there. And now she's going to have to escape again. And I'm going to have to watch her escape again. Don't take her back. But he does. And they capture her. They don't decide to work with him because they both hate the scientists.
The Ice Warriors are like, thanks for bringing us Victoria, but we don't care about you. And make him dead.
I actually thought they were going to squeeze him. Because they're standing on either side of him. I thought they were going to just squeeze into him. Like, together. But they didn't. They didn't do that.
That would be so upsetting.
That might be a little much for Doctor Who.
But I mean, if you look at it, it looks like they're doing it. It looks like that's the direction they're going. But then they don't. And they shoot him. But eventually you do see two things squeeze someone. But that's a different story altogether. Has nothing to do with the Ice Warriors.
You keep getting me excited, man.
keep getting teased.
I want to go watch more Doctor Who right now. So, meanwhile, Pinley has bumped into the Doctor, and he's taken the Doctor back to the Plant Museum where he's got Jamie, and the Doctor's like, it's just temporary paralysis, I hope.
They're also totally running out of time. The glacier's moving faster. It's going to hit the base. It's really close to the Plant Museum.
Like, I think they're going to have to get out of there.
The female scientist, Jane, is getting on to Clint.
Like, you need to...
You need to make a decision. Make a decision now. We are running out of time.
And stop Hamleting.
No.
What?
No. You need to... You need to make a decision now. Quit relying on this computer and tell us what to do. And he's like, I'm just going to keep asking the computer. And the computer says to wait. So we're waiting.
So the Doctor, meanwhile, he's going to go confront the Ice Warriors. He does this really silly ducking under the giant sonic cannon.
He rolls under the cannon, yeah.
And then
like people do when you're filming and they try not to get in your shot. That's what he does.
And then he gets inside and then they lock him into the spacecraft and then start removing
They ask him, they say, but it depends. It depends on if you're just watching the cliffhanger or if you're watching the recap of the cliffhanger. They say, like, identify yourself. The Doctor says, I don't want to be addressed or I don't want to...
Oh, yeah. It help changes. Me out. I don't remember. The wording changes a little bit from the cliffhanger to the recap.
But yeah, they're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm not going to tell you. And they're like, fine, we're going to take your atmosphere away. And he's like, well, don't do that. That'll kill me. And he's like, you have 5 seconds. And then the Doctor waits till the last second to be like, okay, don't kill me. I'll tell you my name. I think it's literally like, who are you? And he's like, who are you? You tell me first. Like, it's something so ridiculous. And the solution to the cliffhanger is the Doctor just stopped being ridiculous.
That's the end of episode 4. We are now into episode 5, The Not Nice Warriors.
I really just need that sound clip of Jamie.
Good. Ooh. After the...
Yeah, they had a complete mental breakdown. I need that to play after every time you do a title.
Oh, he said, I never answer questions until I'm addressed properly.
So he's being ridiculous, is my point. Yeah. It's not like, I'll never tell you. It's like, they're literally like, who are you? And he's like, I'm not telling you. And that's the cliffhanger. And the solution is, okay, I'll tell you.
I never answer questions until I'm properly introduced.
Introduced. So
this is what he said the second time.
Okay, because that makes more sense than saying addressed. Because one's way more pretentious than the other.
And they mean completely different things. Like, one is, until you've addressed me properly, and the other one's, I've been introduced to you.
Until I know who you are. So the Doctor answers their questions. They don't take away his atmosphere. They take the Doctor prisoner. And the Doctor reunites with Victoria. The Doctor basically shows up and is like, hey, I'm here to help. You want to get off of this planet, right? We can help you do that. Just, like, you know, calm down and stop kidnapping people and shooting them for, like, 5 seconds.
And they're like, if you care so much about us, why didn't you free us before now? We've been here for, like, ever.
I don't know what the Doctor says, but, like, because no one knew you were here, guys. You're under a shit ton of ice. I don't know what you want.
Meanwhile, Pinley is dragging Jamie, I think, back to the base because the Plant Museum's getting
crushed. And there's a little tiny baby bear that attacks him. And it's very scary, but it is a little baby bear.
And it also comes a little out of nowhere. Like, this is a weird subplot of just bear attack.
Penley's dragging Jamie on this, like, board thing, and he has to fight off a bear.
It's like, we need a little more attention in this scene. I don't know, throw a bear in there.
And now a bear is happening. But it's okay. It's fine. It's ultimately inconsequential. I guess his face gets scratched up a little bit, Penley's. The Warriors don't trust the Doctor because they're the bad guys, and the bad guys never really trust the Doctor. A lot of nothing happens.
He also says something about when they are about to be attacked by the bear.
He's like, has a line.
He's like, I'm not a gladiator.
He said, that's not what he said. He says, I'm a scientist, not a gladiator.
No, that's what we said. We wanted it to be a Star Trek reference.
I swear that was the actual quote.
The gist of it is, I'm a scientist, not a gladiator. But then he survived the bear attack. He is a gladiator.
We've thoroughly established that.
He's a gladiator.
They're still fighting at the base. Do we do it? Don't we do it? We don't know. Blah, blah, blah.
This episode is really filler. The Warriors want fuel for their spacecraft.
They're going to take it from the base. And it's going to, like, completely shut down the base. And they won't be able to use the ionizer and everything will get messed up.
Okay, so Jamie and Pinley back at the base. Jamie's, like, telling Pinley, you have to help the Doctor and Victoria.
People trying to convince Pinley to just do his job.
And people trying to convince Clint, too, to do anything instead of just relying on the computer. And, like, a big fight happens. Like, Jamie grabs Clint. They're fighting, and then they all get sort of...
Jamie and Penley get stunned by somebody who's protecting Clint. And
there's one of the other drillers.
They just sort of get taken away. Like, we need to figure out what to do with these guys.
And they're like, well, we have to... trust in the computer. They love that computer, you guys.
Well, there's some scene where they're like, Jane's been like fighting with Clint about the computer.
Now she's like all for it.
I got confused. I was like, is that a different character? Because guys, I don't have a good, I don't have facial recognition much. I was like, I'm not confusing people. That's the same character, right? That she goes from sort of yelling at him to being like, well, if that's what you say, we have to trust the computer. And like, there are times where she's like basically stroking it. Like, the computer knows it'll save us. We'll trust in the wisdom of the computer. And I was like, I don't know what happened. I thought you were against the computer. But it was the same. I'm asking for confirmation.
Yeah, it was.
I have watched things before where, like, a couple episodes in, I go, oh my god, those are two different people. A lot of things make sense now. It happens to me on a regular basis.
She also will be watching something and it'll reveal that one person is another person or something. And she'll just be like, what? What's happening?
Oh, yeah. That spoiled a lot of Dollhouse.
Back on the spacecraft, the doctor makes Victoria cry.
They're trying to figure out how to get out, and the doctor gives her one of these. It does the, like, crying thing, and she's like, oh, okay, and just starts wailing.
She's like, ah, and then, like, talking, like, ah, so what are we doing? Ah, we're doing this.
What's
ah,
the plan?
Don't cry.
I do like that the doctor gives her, like, the formula for it, and she goes, oh, that's just a stink bomb, like, because she recognizes the chemical formula. I was like, right. That's pretty neat.
He's like, yeah, but it could be fatal to them or whatever.
And, yeah, the doctor just sort of unleashes it.
Well, he tries. He can't open the thing.
He can't open it.
She, like, distracts the Ice Warrior, and then the doctor comes over to, like, splash him with it, but, like, cannot get it open.
I guess it's, like, a cork in a vial, and he can't uncork it.
But then he eventually does, and
he eventually has to, like, break the vial.
He splashes it in the Ice Warrior's face, and the Ice Warrior starts to go down and is, like, reaching for the lever that's going to shoot. Oh, yeah, there's a cannon pointed at the base. They're going to destroy the base. And that's the end of episode 5. And we are now into episode 6, which has an even worse title. Ionizer on ice. That's stupid. I don't know.
There's not even a joke in there, man.
It's not. Let's call it the end of the Ice Age.
Okay.
We got through those episodes pretty quickly because they were mostly filler.
When we first started watching, like, the first 3 episodes, I remember being like, oh, I love this. This is bound to be one of my favorite serials. And it lost steam a little bit, but I'm still on board. It was one of the more fun ones to watch.
It might have been better if we had that, like, 15-minute cut out all that filler.
It was easy. It was nice because I was kind of, like, through it. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm already through this whole thing. But it's because I had 15 minutes. I had 2 22-minute episodes turned into 15 minutes. So that was nice.
Somebody should do that with just the entire show.
Oh, man. The base gets shot and there's a chandelier in the base?
Oh, yeah. And it goes, kushoo.
But I just remember thinking, there's been a chandelier here this whole time?
Is it a future chandelier?
Why does a scientific base have a chandelier?
Why not?
That is not at all practical.
I feel like you should save your money for, like, equipment and things, not a fancy chandelier.
The computer had it put in and they just said, computer knows. We gotta do what it says.
Computer just likes fancy lighting.
Maybe that's how they decide if there's something going wrong outside. Like, they're like, when the chandelier falls, we know that's, like, code red. They're like, so it's actually just an indicator. It's an indicator.
I like that.
In stereo, where available.
So the Ice Warriors are attacking the base. They tell the base to surrender. And the base is like, okay. But, like, they come in and they're like, we're gonna take all of your energy. We need whatever you have, whatever fuel you're using to fuel our thing. And they're gonna take all of it. And they're like, well, you can't do that because that'll literally kill everyone.
Mercury isotopes
is what they are using as fuel.
And they take their reactor as well. The doctor is meanwhile messing with the gun. Because, like, there's Ice Warriors at the base, but the doctor and Victoria took out the one guy that was still at the spacecraft.
Yeah, he's messing with the sonic cannon. He's, like, got it wires pulled out, and he's working on it with a screwdriver. He's working with his screwdriver on the sonic cannon somewhere in his head, an idea starts to form.
Oh, wait, so the Ice Warriors at the base are trying to take the reactor, but Clint is like, hey, that would be bad.
Yeah, they'd need the reactor.
Warriors like, we're gonna kill you if you don't. The doctor, meanwhile, is messed with the gun, and he's like, it's going to do something to fluids, which will potentially really hurt the Warriors and make everyone else dizzy. Or kill everyone. Who knows? Let's try it out.
But it's a risk I'm willing to take.
That's almost an exact quote as well.
Because Victoria's like, well, you can't use that. And he's like, gotta.
Got no better plans.
I haven't thought of anything better, so. Which, that's a thing about, too, is he's very sort of, a lot of his plans have a high collateral damage.
Doesn't always work very.
He's like, I don't. Smoothly. I'm going to flood this entire city so that I can get rid of the bad guys.
You're not going to have that city anymore. I hope everyone gets out okay. Yeah, his plans are not... They're very extreme. They're very risky. And they mostly work out okay.
And it does knock out everyone.
Yeah, it doesn't kill them.
To be honest, it knocks out everyone. And then the Ice Warriors kind of get up and, like, the people are still down. And, like, it doesn't kill anybody. But it also doesn't work. It seems like the Ice Warriors recover faster than the people.
And they're leaving and they're just like, I'm going to kill you! They said they actually have a line like that. It's something along those lines. And they just seem very, very angry. They're just leaving. Like, you imagine them, like, punching a wall on their way out. They're like, I hate these guys!
Like, that was rude! I'm out of here! I don't have to put up with this. That is basically what happens.
They get back, the Ice Warriors get back to the spacecraft, and they sort of wake up the one that got the stuff thrown in his face.
Which, at this point, there was all this conversation about what kind of engine does the spaceship have? Is it nuclear? It runs on ionization?
They have an ion reactor.
Ion reactor, okay. And so they're like, that's, like, not the worst.
But it's still pretty risky.
Right, like, it could explode, maybe. It's like 50-50.
The computer says no.
Yeah, and the computer's like, it's too risky. The doctor and everyone else says, well, screw that. We should use it. Even if it's 50-50, we should use it.
And then they, like, ask the computer some question. I don't remember what it is, but, like, the computer just starts going hectic.
The doctor gives it a kind of paradoxy thing to break it. He's like, listen, the computer cannot answer this question. And he's like, here, I'll show you. And he kind of poses the, like, moral dilemma of... with the ion thing of should we use it? It's basically even split of, like, either this will kill us all or we'll all live. What do you think we should... Or we're all going to die from something else anyway. What do you think we should do? And the computer's like, that sounds messed up. I wouldn't want to have to make that choice. And breaks.
And then Penley's like, we're going to do the thing on full power.
The ionization ray.
Science.
The science thing that makes the thing happen.
The science gun. Meanwhile, the ship is preparing to take off and then catches on fire.
But that's it. It's not a big explosion, you guys. It's just a medium-sized explosion, so we're all safe.
Yeah, because the ship explodes and everything explodes, but, like, everyone's okay. Like, the base is fine. And then Clint thanks Penley, but in, like, the sort of backhanded way that, because he's terrible at talking to people. He's like, you know, for, like, a really terrible person, you're pretty all right.
I think what he says, you're the most infuriating person I've ever had the pleasure to work with. Or something along those lines, yeah.
Like, even...
That's always a dynamic that I enjoy. Give me that any day, and I'll be like, I'm just like, I hate working with you, but I respect the hell out of you. That's always fun.
Well, I was just gonna say, and then they're like, so where'd the doctor go anyways? Which is that classic, like, the doctor's gone without a goodbye.
And that's it. That's the end of the Ice Warriors. We did it.
We did another one.
Fight of the Odds! You know, like I said at the beginning, I love the Ice Warriors. I love the race of the Ice Warriors, or the Martians, or whatever we want to call them. I love what they do, and this is the first time we get a chance to see them. So I thought this was a lot of fun. It does have a lot of filler, especially there. You've got about 3 episodes that are pretty high in filler. You could probably watch the first, the second, and 6th episode and figure out what was going on with this one. That said, it's still a really good story. It's got a lot of elements that are very true to Doctor Who even today. We didn't even talk about how similar this story is to Cold War, which is when the Ice Warriors come back in the new series. They took a lot of elements from this story. So, yeah, I think it's a fine story. It's a great story. And I'm a big fan of it.
They even sort of took the idea of whether or not they're, you know, evil or not. Like, that's part of this serial, I think. That's not, like, super heavily leaned on.
That's something that has been an idea within the Ice Warriors for a long time. When you meet them on Peladon, in the Curse of Peladon, you have that same thing, and that actually plays a big part into the story. And that's what I've always loved about the Ice Warriors, is that they're not just, oh, well, they're aliens, they're bad guys. They're just aliens with a different point of view. Sometimes they're going to be the good guys, sometimes they're going to be the bad guys. And that's the first time I had ever experienced a monster like that in Doctor Who. And so this being their first appearance, really does push that forward.
So, Tony, what are your final thoughts?
I don't think I got to talk enough about how much I really liked the design in the first couple of episodes. The suits that people had were great. The dome that they were in was great. Really pretty looking episode. Even the design on the Ice Warriors, even though it's kind of off in some places or ineffective in some places, obviously there's something there that, like, still persists and exists today of, like, the creature that they are. I get kind of tired of being like, this could probably be shorter, because that's almost always true. But I liked it. It was a really cool episode.
I agree. I liked, like, most of it. The only downsides, I'd say, is the voices of the Ice Warriors, assuming we'll get a little bit better in the future. The voice of the computer was annoying. But yeah, I like the characters, and I like the Ice Warriors. I think that they're an interesting alien. And Jamie and Victoria get a little... Victoria especially gets a little more development in this serial. I mean, she is kind of captured a lot, but...
A lot.
But I like her like conversations with the Ice Warrior, and I like her figuring things out pretty quickly, and I like her scheming with the Doctor, using that trope of just damsel in distress thing, but as a distraction.
Yeah, I think that was fun.
I enjoy that, which she's also done before in Tomb of the Cybermen. But yeah, I like it. I thought it was pretty good. Anything you want to pimp out here at the end? Anything you want to plug?
Well, there's my there's the podcast that I do that I mentioned before. It's the Oncoming Storm podcast, which you can if you do a Google search for the Oncoming Storm podcast, you can find us in many different places. Or that is about the Doctor Who spinoff media, such as comics, books, audio. Some of the things that I brought up in this story, or we have talked about or will talk about. And I also, this is unrelated to Doctor Who, but I run a small toy and comic show in Cleveland, Tennessee. If you're in that area, the Chattanooga or Cleveland area, I would love to have you come out to that. That's October 8th this year. So that's kind of my big project right now. And of course, Wholanta, the Doctor Who convention in Atlanta on Memorial Day weekend. We're going to have Colin Baker and Louise Jameson, I think, this year. So it should be exciting.
I think we're going to try to have a live podcast there too.
Oh, good. Maybe we could do one together, because we always do one as well. Last year we got to interview Nick Briggs, so it's quite a bit fun.
Oh, sweet.
That's awesome.
That'd be cool. Thanks for listening. If you like us, go to watchyourasslon.com for more. If you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/watchathon, where there's various levels of rewards. You can watch us watch the episodes. You can watch uncut video of the podcast record and other cool stuff. There's also on our website at watchyourasslon.com/support. There's a link to that Patreon, as well as a link to our Amazon wish list, which has all of the Doctor Who DVDs.
If you'd like to sponsor an episode, if you provide the DVD for us to watch, then we will shout you out on the podcast and add you to our Friends of Rasslon page. Speaking of which, thank you very much, Matt Golden, for providing the Ice Warriors for us.
Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com, and tumbles without an E. Thanks, Matt, for providing this serial for us. And also be sure to rate and comment or whatever you do on iTunes. Do the thing on iTunes. Say you like us on iTunes.
Please, please, and thank you.
And that's it. We'll be back next time for The Enemy of the World.
Awesome.
Which will have special guest Jez Layman.
Yay, I like Jez episodes.
Thanks for listening. Keep calm and wrestle on.
All righty.
Stand by for fireworks. Here we go. Let's get out of here before they come back.